This is Encounters, a dialogue that brings you multifaceted life stories you don't want to miss.
It's just a big culture shock, and it's just one of those things you had to learn. Oh, they're not being rude when they're asking if you got fat, or they're not trying to be rude by asking about your personal life. Yes, they're asking me because they're curious, or because they want to know me better, or they want to be friendly. They want to show that they care about me. So I think I had to reevaluate and say, whoa, okay, I'm a little bit shocked by that, but there are these reasons in these cultural layers of why they're asking that question, and I can't be offended by it. I have to roll with it. Most of my students never had a foreign teacher before. They thought it was just really cool how I moved to a new country by myself with a few other people to do something new. They really admired that because most of them were interested in English language, so they'd watched American movies and TV shows and media, and so they were very curious about what is an actual American like, and is it like the movies that I've seen? So in the same way that I was interested about China, like, is China actually like the movies I've seen, or is it very different? What are the people actually like? It was a really cool cultural exchange in that way. And it was very sweet because they would guide me in certain ways and invite me to like the countryside to visit their parents and have like a meal in their home in Laojia. You know, it was really special because I got a very unique glimpse into their life that helped me understand so much more about China than if I was just, you know, living in Beijing, doing city life all the time and not having that intimate cultural experience in that way.
Hello and welcome to Encounters. I'm your host, Man Ling. My guest today is Rachel Weiss. Rachel is a travel blogger from the United States who has been writing about her experience of living and working in China over the past 5 years. Rachel caught the travel bug while she was on a study abroad program in Greece. After college, she came to China, planning to teach English for a year. But she found herself swept up by how diverse China is, and she decided to stay on. In the years that followed, she visited more than 30 places across the country. Rachel's first destination was Hanyang. The city in the central province of Hunan wasn't on her radar before she decided to come to China. But after 2 years of working there as a university teacher, she fell in love with its natural beauty, its culture, and its friendly people. In today's program, Rachel shares with us what it was like in her first years here, teaching, traveling, and navigating everyday life, and how she overcame the culture shock and adapted to her new surroundings. Your name is Rachel, right?
I am Rachel,
yes. Is that the famous Rachel in some of the soap operas or some, you know, Rachel is such a...
Yeah, you know, every person I meet basically when I come to China, they say, oh, your name is Rachel, like Friends, you know, the TV show Friends. And it's great because it helps people remember my name. I love it.
So you're very, very, very young. Have you noticed that Chinese women are not really... very much sensitive about keeping their age?
Oh, I noticed when I first moved to China, that was one of the biggest differences I noticed is I think Chinese women might be a little bit more sensitive about that or very aware of the age as you approach 30, especially. I learned a lot more about like the leftover women culture and things like that. And when I first moved here, I would get into taxis or I would talk to strangers and they would be like, how old are you? And I found that very interesting about the age. Whereas in America, we would maybe not talk about it so much or so
Never.
Openly.
Yeah.
There were so many things that I realized, oh, they're very direct about that. How yeah. old are you? How much money do you make? Do you have a boyfriend? Are you married?
Yeah.
Do you have children? Uh-huh. Questions that I was approached by immediately by people that usually in America you would want to wait and get to know somebody a little bit first before you start having those conversations.
But did you feel embarrassed when people you've confronted with such stupid questions? I mean, stupid with quote and unquote. Did you feel offended?
Yes, the first time I definitely did. My students used to like come up to me in the morning like, teacher, Laoshi, you know, wow, you look fatter today or you look thinner today. And you feel so confused. First, you feel a little bit offended. You're like, wait, no. How do you know? You can't tell. But also then you feel like, Okay, just a little bit uncomfortable and caught off guard. Like, nobody is so direct to me into my face in America like that. In America, we go around the issue. Oh, you look great. Even if it's like not a real compliment.
Yeah, but you
would never directly say that to somebody's face. Like, oh, wow, you've lost some weight.
And about marriage, too. Yeah. Are you married? Do you have a girlfriend?
Oh my gosh. I've answered that question probably hundreds of times. Do you have a boyfriend?
Yeah.
Do you want a boyfriend? Do you want to date my son? All the taxi drivers are always like, oh, my son, can you help him learn English? Do you want to marry him?
Oh, you can marry
a Chinese man. How do you feel about Chinese men? They're always so direct in asking me about that. Or they ask, have you ever dated a Chinese man? What is it like? I can help you find one. It's very interesting.
Interesting, but I can assume.
Yes.
And I can tell how difficult it was for you.
It's just a big culture shock, and it's just one of those things you had to learn. Oh, they're not being rude when they're asking if you got fat, or they're not trying to be rude by asking about your personal life.
On the opposite, Chinese people, by asking these questions, they've been very, very friendly. They cared about you.
Yes.
That's one way to show our intimacy. Try to be close to you.
Mm.
Because if we are strangers, why should I care about whether you're married, you put on weight, and is your mom, dad good, or whatever? And these things carried in our blood, definitely. And how did you come over with these things? You didn't run away.
No.
Definitely.
I think it's like when moving to any new country and trying to understand a different person's mindset, you have to realize like, okay, whoa, I'm personally a little bit shocked by this statement, but I have to read into the layers of it. And yes, they're asking me because they're curious or because they want to know me better.
Friendly.
Or they want to be friendly. They want to show that they care about me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I had to reevaluate and say, whoa, okay, I'm a little bit shocked by that. But there are these reasons and these cultural layers of why they're asking that question. And I can't be offended by it. I have to roll with it. After being here so long, it's not as shocking anymore.
Yeah, not as shocking anymore, but are you comfortable with these questions?
Still no.
Still no, yes.
I mean, I still get into a taxi. Sometimes I'll have fun with it now, and I'll play like some jokes and banter with them because it's now I understand why they do it, and it makes it a little more fun. And sometimes I'll throw questions out back at them like, oh, are you married? Do you have a boyfriend? Tell me about your children. Who's your wife? And so it's just kind
you
of funny.
The conversation.
Yes, I turn it back on them now.
Yes, indeed. So as a foreigner trying to live in this exotic, attractive, both ancient and modern country, you have to pay some prices because you cannot change the whole people. It's the culture. You have to adapt into it instead of changing it. So the way you try to banter, that's a very nice way.
I think that's the way you have to kind of look at it. You have to roll with it somehow and handle that culture shock in some way. And some people, maybe they hide away. They say, okay, I can't handle this. I need to take time for myself to retreat into myself because there's so much change and newness around me. But other times you have to just adapt, roll with the punches and be flexible. Mm-hmm. Like when you're living someplace new and you're like, well, I either adapt or I'd go back home. But that I didn't want to go back home.
A lot of people ran away. You were one of the brave ones.
I stuck it out, but I'm so glad I did because it's hard when you first move to China. I've known so many people who've moved back home after, 1 year or even less, 6 months, 3 months. But you have to get through that like adaptability period. Otherwise, you will go too
if
soon.
If people decided to run away from a culture, a very different one, and then after half a year or 1 year, usually they ended up with a very negative impression of that country. So the rest of the life, the memories in their brain would be criticism, negativity. But now after 5 years, you survived the initial torturing. The same thing happened to us. I worked outside of my own country and in Western countries, especially because I'm a so-called English-speaking student, right, at the beginning. So in the UK, in Australia, in United States, more or less they got the same sort of culture because they come from the same roots. And then I learned to be, when I eat noodle, try not to make noises,
Oh my gosh, that was one of the most shocking things to me when I would go to noodle restaurants
and
I was sitting next to somebody. You hear all the slurping noises and you're just like, Wow, why are they eating so loudly? What is that about?
But that's not uniquely Chinese. No, Japanese do the same thing.
No, that's true. That's true. Many other cultures do that too. But in the States, I would never do that back home. It's like, eat quietly, eat with your mouth closed. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it seems rude. But here, it's like a compliment, you know? You show how you're enjoying your food by eating it. I did not realize that.
You know something? For example, there are something that I find it unacceptable. For example, people were sucking their fingers when they're eating, you know, fried chicken or whatever in your country, right?
Yep.
Pizza. So we were like, oh, this in that China is no breed.
Yeah.
No family.
That's so interesting to me. I never realized that until I came here and I went to Pizza Hut and they give you gloves to eat your pizza with.
Uh-huh.
And I guess that must be a similar thing. Like to you, you wouldn't pick it up with your hands.
Yeah, that seems gross
and to like lick your fingers. But to us, that's so normal.
See?
That's interesting.
So the shock is for you, for me, we have all experienced all these shocks, right? And how old when you arrived in China? How old were you?
I was 22. So I just graduated from college, from university.
What did you study?
So I studied public relations and communications.
Oh, you were well trained for that.
So that's a major. I knew I wanted to
prepare
be in
you,
media.
Right?
It did prepare me. But I came to be an English teacher at first, though, just like everybody else. You know, everybody wants to get their foot in the door and teach abroad. I thought I would teach for 1 year and then go back to the States and
Who
do
introduced
a media
you
job.
To China? Because you can teach English, you know, elsewhere.
Sure. Right? So like I had, there was a program at my school where Chinese students from like Guangdong would come and study abroad. And so I had lots of Chinese friends at my school, and we also had some friends who taught before in China, and they kind of introduced the idea to me. So I had all of that kind of reinforcing China in my mind. I didn't really look at like studying abroad anywhere else because of all of that China influence around me, like right before I graduated.
Uh-huh.
It all seemed to be leading to China.
In Texas?
Actually, I went to school in Arkansas, which is still very southern, even more southern, I would say, than Texas, even more in that kind of southern conservative bubble.
Really?
Yeah.
And in that part of the United States.
It's so shocking. Yeah.
You still had a lot of Chinese students?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. And these Chinese students, I almost feel like a little bad for them. They were like, I'm going to study in America. And they're like thinking about a big city, New York City, or like California, Los Angeles, and they come to Arkansas. This small little city in the middle of rural Arkansas. And they're like, there's no Chinese restaurants here. There's hardly any city life here. And then the first time I actually went to Guangzhou to see where some of them lived, I was like, what? You guys live in this huge, huge city and you actually moved to small town America. I think that was probably even more culture shock for them than for me moving to China.
Definitely.
What a crazy different lifestyle.
And then I think one thing for them to brag about is that that's the hometown of former U.S. president.
Yes, exactly. That's the big
that's
thing
the
that
only
they have.
Thing.
That's the only thing. That's what they have to say.
So their living standard actually lowered.
I think so.
I felt
so bad. I was like, how did you guys do that for 4 years? Because after I moved to Guangzhou and lived there for a year, I was like, why would you want to leave here? Like, it's amazing. You have everything. You have Didi. You have all these apps. You have a big city life. Like, moving to small town Arkansas, like, we really had nothing around us. It was a dry county, too. You couldn't buy alcohol inside the city county. We had strict rules at my university. Like, we had a curfew. You couldn't have boys in your dorm. It was a very, like, different kind of university lifestyle than what most people imagine university life is like in America. Mm-hmm. People imagine these crazy parties, you know, the drinking, the drugs, the fun lifestyle, like I mentioned before. But my experience was just very, very different.
They would be happy when they ended up with a very good sort of mastered language. I mean,
yes,
they could speak
exactly. It is worth it when that's your language goal.
And the different ways of education.
Sure.
Approaches are different.
Definitely.
If we're going to talk about differences, we can talk 3 days now.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, let's focus on you get influenced by your Chinese classmates, right, surrounding you. But starting from when you heard about China. Before you met Chinese students, what was China a concept, an idea, a place? What is China in your mind?
So in my mind, China was basically what I had seen from movies growing up, and mostly like Disney movies. Yes, Kung Fu or Mulan.
So you heard about China mostly about movies. Your parents, are they interested in Chinese
stuff?
Oh,
no. I mean, neither of my parents have traveled outside of the States. So like, it wasn't even about China. It's just like other cultures, really. They never had that experience.
It's like the farmers here in China never leave their homeland, right? That's called a remote small town population. They never leave their small terrain.
It seems to be some American ideas too. Like, I think many Americans don't even have a passport. And that's the thing, that because America, maybe it's similar to China as well, that your country itself is so big that when you travel to another province or another state, and moving or traveling internationally is kind of expensive. So unless you have the money or the time or the resources, just like for my parents, it wasn't the opportunity or the timing.
But what about now? After you got exposed and you were turning your travel sort of hobby or whatever I call it into an occupation now, it impresses me, right? Are they supportive, or have you influenced them?
Oh, they're so supportive of me because they see like how I've always wanted to travel and these experiences and this travel brand that I've built and the people I get to meet, the international experiences I get to have here. It is very exciting to them. And it's kind of just shown them a world like this media and how interconnected we are by the globe. Like, they get to see these experiences I'm having that they never knew about before. And they're very supportive. They're very excited for me. They want to come to China now, but still it's the same kind of thing. My parents are just, it's an older generation and they have older ideas. And it's also the time, the money still, and the rest of my family's in the States. So it's just weighing those options of they would like to travel.
The plane ticket is for a whole family is too much.
So expensive. Yeah, so expensive. And even now with COVID, of course, like impossible.
That's a good excuse for you not to invite and spend your parents here. But by the way, that are you aware that this is a Chinese thing? When we have kind of a blurred demarcation between parents' wealth and children's wealth, you know, it's our practice. Once we got the money, we definitely are going to pay for our parents' ticket and everything.
Oh, yeah. It's a very different, I think, generational mindset. I remember my university students used to always tell me, oh, I need to get a good job and provide and have a family, because when I get older, especially the boys, they're like, I need to take care of my family. It's my duty. It's just what we do. And in return, maybe your parents will help take care of your children while you go to work. And it's like a very family structural unit that you take care of each other. I told some of them about, like, some people in America will do this, but some will, their parents will take care of themselves, or they will go to a nursing home, or it's a totally different idea that I think Americans, the younger ones, feel less of that pressure and responsibility to take care of their parents when they're older in that way.
But I'm talking about, maybe I'm going to ask the question in a very direct way. If one day you've saved enough money, are you going to pay for your parents' expenditure if you're going to invite them come to here and travel internationally with you?
Ooh, that is a very direct question.
Yeah, very direct.
I never thought
think
about
it. Just ask directly. Because that's the culture difference.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. Ask me directly anything. I'm used to it. I guess at this current stage of my life, no. Right now, they are still more
well off. I mean, you have
well
already.
Off.
Yeah. Yeah. They're more
they're
well
still
off.
More, more well off than I am right now and more financially secure and dependent. But yeah, maybe as I'm growing and getting older and as my financial security is stronger and, you know, they require being taken care of. Even for that, though, I think that's different. I don't think I would. I think that's a different thing than taking care of them in a nursing home. Like, international travel and expenditure, I think that would be seen as like a different kind of expense than nursing home, where it's like something to take care of them, you know?
See, that's the difference, because either they decided to come to China, even strongly influenced by you, their daughter, on China. If they didn't want to spend that money for themselves, you're not going to offer, right?
Probably no.
Yeah. But let me tell you, I want you, Rachel, to tell Chinese listeners that you guys have a very clear, you know, after you grow up, right? I manage my own finance, my parents' money, my parents. It doesn't mean that you have no love. Do you love your parents?
Yes.
Very much, right?
Very much.
But it's not in a way that you can spend my money, I can spend your money.
We have a set independence from that financially. I think it's mostly expected, because I think how we're raised traditionally in America, it could be different family to family, but at least in my family and most of my friends, people I know in America, you're taught to be raised to make yourself independent and to not rely on anybody, take personal responsibility, have personal freedom and independence, so that when you are 18, you're ready to go. Or at least after college, you're ready to go. You can take care of yourself. You're on your own. Like, that's very strong independent skills that my parents instilled in me. And that's why the financial thing, we're not tied together at all. I mean, my parents will be kind. Sometimes they would help me with money. And if they ever needed anything, I could help them as well. But it's very independent, very distinct. And it doesn't
mean
I don't
love them.
And you
need to return the money if you borrow, right?
Sure. Yes. See? Usually it's more like that kind of thing.
There's no borrowing here in China from parents and from children. It's just a give.
So it's very different.
Sometimes when we talk about traveling, travel shows, right? We always talk about differences. But these are the fundamental differences. Mm-hmm. It's in the way of thinking, it's culture, in the value, it's everything, in the outlook. If you're going to love this country, you have to understand.
Sure.
You know why, you know.
Totally.
But understand it's not changing or making you're going to live Chinese way or thinking in Chinese way. No. It's just understand that, then you don't have negative feelings. You don't have hostility.
Right.
Tell me why you choose Hunan first. Because, yeah.
Nobody knows really Hangyang at all, especially in the States. When I told people I was moving to Hangyang, they're like, what?
One of the second, it's the second largest.
It's the second largest in Hunan, yeah. But nobody's heard of
historical.
I didn't know about it. I only knew like Beijing and Shanghai. Mm-hmm. I barely knew like Guangzhou. So for me to move there, I was just comfortable because I knew some of the people who lived there before. And I was going with a group of other Americans to live there together. So I felt like, oh, I'm not going to this small city by myself. Alone in the middle of China, lost. I felt a little bit comfortable. And it was just set up. I knew the school I was going to work at. I felt like it's just a good opportunity. I was ready to just jump into something new.
A teaching job, right?
A teaching job at a university.
Which university?
Nanhua Dashui, Hunan.
Oh, you like that? You like the job?
Actually, it was a great experience. I mean, I'm not a teacher by trade. Like I said, I studied public relations. So throwing myself into a classroom was really hard at first. But the students were all 18, 19. I was 22. It was mostly a friendship relationship. It was fun because they could teach me about all the things about China I didn't understand. It was the perfect introduction to China, honestly, because I could hang out with them. They'd show me how to like order food, help me talk to taxi drivers. I would call them up all the time like, oh, could you bang wo? Like, I need some help. Can you help me do this? And so it was really nice to have that security around me, even though I was in a small city, even though I didn't really know how to teach English. It was more of conversations that I could have with them, and I could have fun activities and discussions. It was really a nice segue into China.
These 17, 18-year-old students, right, by the time they enter college. But, you know, their mindset, they're
so
overprotected.
Different.
It's like 14, 12.
Yes, I realized that
much
emotionally
younger.
They were almost like middle school because of they didn't date when they were in high school.
No.
The parents forbid them.
No.
They were just studying all the time. They had a very strict schedule. And I realized that my experience was so different than their experience. And I had to learn so much about what their mindset was going into college versus mine because of how different they were.
So they accepted you in a very, very, you're blessed. You were blessed because you're an amateur teacher. Like you say, you were not trained as a teacher, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you were young.
I was young.
You knew very little about China.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then even adult children, we were said 18 to like 12, but even adult people here in China, they were not challenging, confronting students. No. Such a young age and not trained for teaching, you could not survive in Western sort of universities. Definitely
no.
Oh,
no. I could not do what I did in any other country, really.
Yeah, indeed.
What I did here. Sometimes my friends and I would be like, we're university professors right now? Like, it would be totally different. But given the situation of being in Hangyang, we were the only foreign teachers at our school. Most of my students never had a foreign teacher before, and many of them had never spoken to
a
foreigner.
They respected you so much.
They
right?
did, and they thought it was just really cool how I, you know, moved to a new country by myself with, you know, a few other people to do something new. They really admired that because most of them were interested in English language. So they'd watched American movies and TV shows and media. Mm-hmm. And so they were very curious about what is an actual American like? And is it like the movies that I've seen? So in the same way that I was interested about China, like, is China actually like the movies I've seen? Or is it very different? What are the people actually like? It was a really cool cultural exchange in that way.
Did you bring something to your students? I mean, in your eyes, they were like middle school students. Mm-hmm. And did you help them to grow up a little bit, Western way?
I think in some ways, yes, I did.
Tell me examples.
So I could be very flexible with my language classes that I taught them. So I would really try to introduce some fun topics that would just totally shake their mindset. So sometimes we would have a class about dating.
Yeah.
So, which was so fun. So I used to just show them like maybe video clips from popular TV shows and like break down the dating language and culture because they just were so fascinated by it and had no idea just about, you know, in America, America, we have differences in, you know, we have dating, but then you have boyfriend and girlfriend, and then you have, you know, like more serious, you know, getting engaged. And just the whole flow of that was so fascinating to them. And, you know, they wanted to know more about, like, do you have a boyfriend? And what is dating actually like? And can you introduce a cute American boy to me? Or just things like that. They were so fascinated by just the real day-to-day life and even just slang for words. Like, I used to teach my students so much American slang because, you know, when they're learning English from the textbook, it's always like, hello, boring. How are you today? Yes. So by the book and so regimented. So I wanted to teach them more like casual, like, mm-hmm. how do Americans actually talk to each other? It's not going to be like, fine, thank you, and you?
I want to know that how much Chinese students changed you. You obviously bring the bad, so-called bad part of influence into their lives, right? Make them more liberal-minded and then more independent in thinking. And you actually were speeded up, expedited their growth.
Right.
They in front of you like a 14-year-old, 18, like 12 even. They can, okay, examination-oriented culture. Now, even today, not much change. Although the government is trying very hard. Universities are trying hard to encourage hobbies, yeah. art, music.
Things outside of academic.
Yeah. But only. Still, you know, the mindset of most of the parents, study.
Sure.
So you helped them grow. But I won't know that how Chinese students helped you because you were little. 5 years ago, you're 22, right?
Mm-hmm.
Same age. Category.
Sure. Yeah. I'm in the same bracket, basically.
Bracket.
Yeah. I really like what you said. I feel like I expedited their growth. I think these students were keen on learning and opening their minds anyways. And having a foreign teacher was a more direct line to helping them pursue that growth in a direct way. I think that's a really great way to look at it. And then for me, also in the same way, I think it expedited my growth to understanding and learning about China in a deeper way. Because there were some days before I knew about China, when we moved to the small city, we would walk around the grocery store trying to find anything that was recognizable. I couldn't read or speak Chinese hardly ever. And people were just constantly staring at me, taking my photo when I was walking down the street. It was just a very, like, it could be very overwhelming on some days. But it was nice having those students there to, like, they would take my hand, guide me. And it was so cute because they were a little bit younger in their mindset. They were so, like, nurturing and caring with me. And they became very close to me and just showing me, like, oh, it's okay. We'll take care of you. You're like our sister, Jie, you know?
Jie, yes.
Yeah, and it was very sweet because they would guide me in certain ways and invite me to, like, the countryside to visit their parents and have, like, a meal in their home in Laojia, you know? It was really special because I got a very unique glimpse into their life that helped me understand so much more about China than if I was just, you know, living in Beijing, doing city life all the time and not having that intimate cultural experience in that way.
So you went really into the lives of these people.
Oh yeah. And I went and stayed with my friend in Shaoyang. Yeah. I've been to Chenzhou and all these, like, even smaller rural places in China where you see, like, home life and family life.
No tourist can pay for that.
Oh no.
No.
Yeah.
No. No matter how much money you're willing to spend.
Even if you pay a tour company now, I see, like, there's some great experiences you can have where they're like, stay with the family, homestay. Yeah. But it's so different when it's like, this was my student and, like, I taught them for a year and they invited me in. Like, you have that close connection. And even now, 5 years later, I still talk to many of my students I taught when I first moved here because of how special that relationship was between us.
Did you have sort of difficulty trying to understand, or did you enjoy your stay?
Half and half.
Half and half. Tell me specifically.
Sure. So, like, there were, of course, the really hard things, which is language, first of all. Like, I knew how to count to 10 when I moved to China, but just getting over some of those language barriers or difficulties. Someone will call you on your phone. You have no idea what they're saying. You're so frustrated. You just want to hang up on them. But you're like, this is probably important.
But I'm talking about when you went into the students' family
homes.
Yeah. Do you felt so difficult or embarrassing, or things that you find it so difficult to understand, or you feel comfortable, you know, you can quickly feel at home?
I think for me, it wasn't too strange or difficult to ease in because I had a student there who could translate what was happening in English.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really actually more funny and interesting to me to try to understand what was going on around me without really actually knowing anything. Sometimes the family would be having discussions. They'd be talking and pointing at me. And, you know, the student would be trying to frantically explain, but they're still a student trying to go back and forth between these two languages and two cultures. It was really a funny experience. And then later in the night, you know, the grandfather would bring out the baijiu. And he's like, Gambei, Gambei. And that was a quick learning experience.
Did you stay overnight?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I stayed overnight. You know, that was interesting because you're in the countryside and, you know, the water, the plumbing is not the best. And it's just a very quick...
Were there similarities compared to U.S. farmers? Did you discover any?
My grandparents have a farm. They own a bunch of cattle and they would grow some things. But even them...
Compare them. Farmer, compare your grandfather's farming sort of with Chinese farmers. I assume you went to a farmer's farm.
Yeah, sure. My grandfather is more of a Texas cattle farmer. So they would raise cattle and it was more about, you know, they have
larger
a lot of
range.
Land. Right. Yes, huge amounts of land, lots and lots of cattle. But they had like a little house in a more suburban area. So they would go out to the farm and then come back in.
It's already modernized.
Yeah, already a little bit more
but here
modernized.
In China, no.
It seems no. Because
it's a
like,
small
they also
patches
had more,
of field.
Yeah, they had more machinery. We have more, like, you know, things to help with the farming. Whereas, like, when I went in rural China, like, people had their own little vegetable gardens. And they had, you know, it seemed
manual labor.
Modern. Yes,
but mostly manual labor.
Yes.
Did you feel that you actually, by seeing these scenes, you went back in time?
Yes. Actually, this is strange now, but reliving that experience... I was like, this is what I thought China would be like from the media, because you feel like this is all the pictures I see of people in the rice paddies farming and doing manual work, and it feels like you're taken back several decades. And it was such a contrast because I had already been in China for a while and I saw that, oh, China is modern and developed in big cities. But then you go to the countryside
you
and
still have this thing.
Such a contrast. Yeah such a huge contrast.
Do you find it picturesque or prosaic or poetic even?
I do.
Or
I
it's like just it's... the backwardness and ugliness and labor, you know.
I think it's very beautiful in some ways. I know that people are very determined. They still have to work very hard. And some of them have very... you know, very difficult lives doing that. But I also think it's kind of a lovely simplified lifestyle that you're not busy focusing about the busyness of, you know, city life and all these extra things filling up your time and space. I was recently talking to one of my Chinese friends and she said a lot of Chinese people love this romantic kind of dreamy lifestyle of the countryside. And it's very popular on Bilibili right now that there's some really popular girls who will document her life growing vegetables and gathering wood and chopping it. Yes. So I was recently watching some of her videos and I felt kind of the same way that you look at that and it's like, oh, it's very back to the basics of life.
So when you were there, you got this soothing and calm feelings of a rural life.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the a rural sort of school you visited in Hanyang, right?
Mm.
Did you go to assist them in teaching or just as a tourist?
So my friend had an English school in Hanyang, and they're from Hunan, but they're from a little village called Chenzhou, which is like maybe 30 minutes by Gaotier from Hanyang. So one of the teachers from this little English school in Hanyang, they were from Chenzhou, and they were trying to initiate a program to start going to these rural places, especially her hometown village, to try to educate the kids and inspire them to want to learn English, to show them what it can do to open your mind and just teach you more and help you inspire your success, things like that. So they invited some foreigners like me to come to
what
Chenzhou.
What did you do?
So they invited me to come and give like a short English presentation. I couldn't really teach a whole lot because these students had never had really much English lessons. They had a little bit. They had
did
basic
they understand
knowledge.
What you were saying?
They knew hello and bye-bye.
And you delivered the speech in completely in English?
I gave a very short, brief English introduction. Basically how I would give my kindergarten presentations.
Simplify your language.
Very simplified. But these students were a little bit older. Maybe they were like 8, 9, 10. But even still, their English language level was very low. And they had never seen a foreigner before. They had very basic English lessons. They could introduce their names. And they could introduce a few colors and fruits and vegetables.
First grader or second grader?
They were about 8, 9,
school.
Or 10, so primary school.
Mm-hmm. What were their response to you?
They were so excited. I mean, because the whole point of me going wasn't to give a big English lesson or, you know, I was only there for a few days. So it wasn't to try to be like, teach the children as much as you can in 3 days, because obviously that was not going to work and their language level was not high enough that I could give lessons by myself and have them fully understand. It was more to inspire them in some way. Mm-hmm. Most of them had never met a foreigner before. They'd never seen somebody like me in their village. It was very surprising
to them.
Your
blonde hair attracted them.
Oh, yeah. They always wanted to touch it. They would reach out.
Still, right?
You
were like reliving the experiences that your predecessors experienced 3 or 4 decades ago.
Right.
When China just opened in 1978, foreigners came in. And then even in big cities like Shanghai and Beijing, people were stalking them. And can I touch? Can I touch you?
Yeah. Can I touch?
Can I 拍照吗? 拍照 is even later. 拍照 means that they became bolder.
Yes,
at the beginning,
true.
They were like, oh, it's like in a zoo.
Yes, a little bit.
Yeah, like, can I touch your
bit.
Hair?
They want to touch and they want to, yeah, like, yeah. They used to, in Hanyang at least, they used to follow me around the grocery store. Yeah, and be like, oh, what is the foreigner buying? What do foreigners eat? They would have all these, like, questions that in your mind, you're like, oh, I'm the same, but it's so new and fresh in their minds.
Did you have time to merge with the students, like eating together in their canteen, you know? Talk to them.
Ooh, yeah, we did, because we had time to like play a game with them, like in the village, and had time to like eat with them too. And so it was really a cool experience, because you realize even though there is that language barrier and that littleness, like the shyness that they felt at first, after a while they became more comfortable, they become a little bit braver, like you said, and they just, and you realize their kids are kids no matter where you are. Like they want to play, they want to have fun, they want to have games, and it was just fun to experience that with them.
It was a sort of eye-opening experience for the little ones, but I want to know that on your side, was it also an eye-opening sort of experience? In what way?
Yeah, it was definitely eye-opening, because it was an even more in-depth rural experience that I hadn't even had in Hanyang. Because Hanyang was still a city, and it's the second biggest city in Hunan. But seeing that rural village, it almost was like, wow, there are villages like these way far out. It took a long time to drive to get there. And just understanding and realizing the reality of a lot of these children in the future, their education, that their parents don't have money. They live in a really small village. And, you know, it was moving and inspiring to see that, you know, all these people were coming together to try to inspire the children and help them out of this situation. But it was also like, you know, a little bit humbling of an experience to see they don't have the things that you had growing up, the things that helped you succeed and get to where you are. And I felt very blessed and grateful for what I've had. It puts things in perspective for you to see that kind of situation, and it makes you want to try harder to do what you can to help other people.
And were they included? I mean, the inspiration you got from this trip would become sort of energy or be included in your future plans?
Yeah, I think meeting them and like seeing their faces in my mind, even still today, like I have all these blogs I wrote with them, and just taking photos of the experience, because it was such a memorable few days for me in this village. It's something that's kind of kept me going. And, you know, even when I was teaching kindergarten, it would remind me of them and the kids that I met. And I know for them, that was probably a few days in their life. Maybe they'll remember me as that foreigner, but maybe some of them are too young that it's not going to be that as impactful. But for me, it's something that stuck in my mind more.
So they have already become a kind of driving force for you to do something, to reach out.
I had so much appreciation for the teachers I met. I became friends with some of them on WeChat in Chenzhou. I think they probably were even more inspiring to me, like, and the driving force that stuck in my mind than even the kids, to be honest, because I saw these teachers, like, lived on campus with the kids. They lived in a small village. They did everything they could to help these children succeed.
They were dedicated, right?
So dedicated. They worked long days. They would teach all day, and then they would still have to, like, you know, watch over the kids, help them with other things, monitor the children. You really have no break. You're just constantly giving everything you have to help these kids succeed and to make sure that they're doing okay. And they also didn't have many resources, you know. They had very limited books and like curriculum. They had to develop their own things most of the time, stay up late working long hours to develop these lessons, grade the lessons, review the lessons, help the kids. Oh my gosh, they worked so hard.
So your invitation, they invite you as part of their efforts to bring something new to the kids.
Sure.
And these teachers were are actually the hope of these kids in the future.
I think so.
That was the difference, huh?
Yeah, and they were so nice to me, and they were like, wow, thank you so much for coming. It's great to have you here. It like really is inspiring the children. But like, I just feel like turning around saying, no, like you are the ones here day after day after day. You are the ones making the real difference in these kids' lives. And it's, you know, I'm just here for one day and it's fun, I can dance and play and sing, but then, you know, I'm not there anymore. You guys are the ones really putting the work in.
Looking back on her time living in China, Rachel says that it is nothing like what she had expected before she arrived. She believes the only way to understand a country is to go there and experience life there for yourself. Sometimes there are cultural differences and traditions that can't easily be figured out, but that's part of what makes the experience of living overseas so unique. In our next episode, Rachel will share with us more of her travel stories as an American expat living in China, along with some insider tips on how to make the most of a visit here. And that's the end of our show. I'm Manling. Thank you for joining me. Be sure to visit chinaplus.cri.cn and look for Encounters, where you will find other episodes of the show, along with Manling's journals about our interviews.